retired faculty, students, former students, family and friends. I'm really embarrassed by all this attention, but I give my heartfelt thanks to all of you who have made the, taken the time and made the effort to come and join me in celebrating my 90th birthday. As Brent mentioned earlier this morning, the primary purpose was to announce the beginning, the establishment of the Center for Faculty Documentation within the herbarium. And we've been talking about this for several years, and I've been dragging my feet. Finally, the age factor came in, and we decided it was either now or possibly never. So, I have many, many people to thank for this event. First of all, Brent Mitchell himself. Brent generously provided funds and space and equipment for this event. Before I go any farther with my acknowledgments, I'd like to say a word about the Center for Faculty Documentation. This started in the basis of it started in 1950 when I started two projects, the Index Nomen Amalgarum, which contains the scientific names of all algae, and the BPU, or the Bibliographia Phacologica Universalis, which is the catalog of all the algal literature. We did this until the 1980. After 1980, we restricted ourselves to that literature which had some pertinence to taxonomy. But the Center for Phacological Documentation also has vast resources in the archives. We have inherited, for instance, the pamphlets, books, manuscripts, field books, and so forth, of Professor Poppenfuss, and prior to that, William Albert Setchell, who was our first professor of botany. And it's being continued now by, entries for the INA and BPU are being continued now by Dick Moe and Max Homersand. And Max Chicago. Anyway, going back to this event, the three people who are most responsible for the success, and that's Dick Moe and Kathy Ann Miller and Stacey Marcus. Where's Stacey?
Right there.
Thank you guys. Thank you.
Nick and Kathy Ann made the plans and carried them out with the advice, expert advice, of Stacey Marcus. Stacey has worn many hats during her stay in the herbarium. Presently, she is a project manager for the Jepson Flora. She's also editor of the Jepson Globe, and she's had many other hats and responsibilities, and has had such expert experience that she keeps things running very smoothly. And I thank you especially.
Thank you.
And I'd like to mention also those people who came from relatively long distances to be here. There's Willem Prudhomme van Rijn and his wife, Hilda. There they are. Stand up. And there's Chris Maggs from Northern Ireland. And there's Professor Blue from South Korea. I'm sure there must be other attractions here besides my birthday. In addition to I'm a senior moment. So, I want to thank all the staff, permanent staff of the herbarium, permanent as it can be, and the student employees of the, and temporary employees of the macroalgal digitization project. And all of these have either volunteered or been commandeered into helping out. I really appreciate that. Now to get to the crux of the matter, which I believe I proposed a theme for the talks. Right?
Yeah.
It was just, well, I forgot now. It's the interplay.
The interaction.
Interaction.
Taxonomy and
yeah.
Molecules.
Well, I learned a lot and was today by our speakers. Some I could understand, and some went over my head. But I'm sure that many of you were in a position to appreciate this. I admire people who are contributing to our molecular data, and particularly the older people who have had to retrain themselves.
Yes.
And I really take my hat off to them. I've never tried it, and I've been a user of information, but not a contributor. And thinking about the interaction, first thing, I believe that molecular data and molecular systematics should somehow remain useful in a general sense. It's a tool which I believe should be able to help out in understanding our biodiversity for all people, including ecologists, physiologists, and so forth. So, for that reason, I have some reservations which I'd like to talk about. One is I call it the holistic approach, which is used by Homer Sands and his team, in which they extract DNA and make comparisons of the nucleotide sequences, but that's accompanied by minute anatomical observations, particularly of the female reproductive system in the red algae. And that's accompanied by getting the DNA from type specimens, and as I say, this is a holistic approach. They use everything possible, and the result has been spectacular. Homer Sand mentioned the work that he had done earlier, particularly in the Jacquardinaceae, which has been completely revised and very sensibly. And I think we can, when we think about it, it's something we can accept with no problem. And when genera are split, fractionated, and I believe that if they're supported by molecular data, and also use a holistic approach of morphological differences, that we can readily accept it. For instance, the recent fractionation of the genus Lawrencia into two or three more, we can accept that. It's perfectly fine. I have trouble, however, when it comes to merging. And I know that I'm a co-author of a paper with Chris Maggs, but I still recommend when you're talking about Olva, talk about Olva, you talk about it's really been what happens is we've had a very large literature on the intermorphism of shallow, muddy shores. And now then, when the ecologist comes along, he has to make a difference. He has to say, we're looking now at these muddy shores with this intermorphal-like olives. And the real olives are out in the open ocean. And the problem with merging is that you also merge the two, what was previously considered to be distinct. And even though we have this intermediate species of intermorphic linza, which has gone back and forth, we know that and we appreciate that. But we still can find examples of good olives and good intermorphics. And similarly, the main problem with that is that this merger does not contribute anything to our knowledge of the individual species. We still have a big mess in intermorphic and in Olva, the intermorphoid types of Olva. And same thing in more recent merger of Prionylus and Gratilupia. Well, we all knew that both were polymorphic genera, and we all knew that our cases were full of Gratilupoid Prionyluses and Prionyloid Gratilupias. But still, we live with that. And when Wang et al. In 2001 merged the two genera, again, they didn't contribute anything except to follow up the nomenclature. Because of the occurrence of homonymy, they had to change the name of our most common Prionylus, Prionylus lanceolatus, which now becomes Prionylus.
That's the point.
And it wasn't until Paul Rasmussen and his team really focused in on the individual species that we had something new to talk about. Before that, it was a big mess. As I say, I really appreciate all these people who are making contributions, but I'm a user, and I feel that there should be some practical part of this. And I recently reviewed a paper in which is on coralline algae, in which Coralline elongata, which is a common species in the Atlantic, was proposed as a type species of a new genus, which they call Elisosandra, something like that. The authors admit that there is absolutely no morphological difference between this new genus and all of the Corallinas they've ever looked at. That they admit that. And to me, that's crazy. How can you have a new genus based only on a clade in a phylogenetic tree? But there it is. They admit this is the first time this has been done. I hope it's the last. Have I thanked everybody?
You could thank them again.
I do thank all of you for coming in. And as I say, it's only accidental that it's my birthday, because I was using it as an excuse. The real purpose was to introduce you to the Center for Phycological Documentation. And now I invite you to take a tour. You're going to be a guide?
Yeah, we'll guide groups of people through the herbarium.
Okay. So thank you all for coming.